This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
7:15, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Billy Joel here bringing us back from break, echoing what Nicolas Maduro had to say yesterday in court, that he is an innocent man. David Law joins us, E. James Kelly Jr., class of 1965, research professor of law and courtesy professor of politics at the University of Virginia. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Happy 2026. I'm good. I love Billy Joel, too.
Yeah, good. Happy 2026 to you. So, you know, if you go to Louisiana Revised Statutes or whatever, the criminal code book, it says you can't, and I'm paraphrasing here, you can't break into somebody's house and take their property. If you do, you get arrested, you get indicted, you get charged with criminal trespass, burglary, whatever the statute says. That becomes a lot more complicated when you're talking about plucking a sitting president from a country and a 25-page indictment and proving that criminal case in court, right?
Yeah, but you would be amazed by how little the courts have actually said about this when it comes to the president's power to do something like this. You know, part of the problem here is the way executive power expands over time and is expanded so much since the time of the framers is the executive branch builds on what it's done in the past. So there's this two-step process, right? First, the executive branch asks itself, gee, am I allowed to do this? And then it turns, how does it ask that question? It turns to its own lawyers in the Department of Justice. And so the executive branch lawyers tend to give this answer that favors the executive branch. The answer is, gosh, thanks for asking a whole lot. So, for example, the infamous torture memo, right? That came out of the Department of Justice. And
Tell me what that is, David. Refresh our memory, please. The infamous torture memo?
Yeah, the torture memo was, there were lawyers in the Department of Justice who said that it was okay to use practices like waterboarding against so-called enemy combatants who were being held in Guantanamo Bay during the war on terror in the Bush 2 years. So that memo came from the executive branch's own lawyers in the Department of Justice. So first you get a memo like this from your own lawyers that says, yeah, it's okay for you to do this. And then what happens is you would think Congress might say something, right? Like, we can't believe you sent the Delta Force in plus the Airborne Rangers into Venezuela to grab some guy. Don't you need us to declare war? But it's so rare for Congress to push back hard enough, long enough to get a court ruling on this. Like, look at the current situation, for example, where the Republicans control Congress and the White House, right? So the congressional Republicans are going along with pretty much everything the current administration wants to do. Now, sometimes maybe initially Congress sues, but, you know, here's the problem. Lawsuits take time. They take a lot of time, and elections occur every 2 years. So then the White House changes hands, or Congress changes hands, or both, and the lawsuit gets dropped or settled, so you never get a court ruling. Then the next opinion from the Department of Justice lawyers builds on the previous opinion, right? So this is a pretty good example of that, where you remember 1989, we went into Panama and removed General Manuel Noriega. And the question was, well, did we have the legal authority to do that? That was the president's question. The president turns to his own lawyers, and he had a lawyer in the Office of Legal Counsel, a guy, you may recognize his name, Bill Barr, right? Mm-hmm. So in the first Bush administration, Bush 1, this guy was assistant attorney general working in, you guessed it, the Office of Legal Counsel in the Department of Justice. And he writes this memo that says, yeah, actually, the president can do this. And he says, sure, this is, you know, and let's say it's against international law. Let's say it's against the UN Charter. All that, in theory, applies to the U.S. But then he lays out this two-part argument. Right? He says, first, the president has inherent constitutional power to enforce the laws under the Take Care Clause. And that includes the power to enforce criminal laws. And that includes the power to enforce criminal laws, notwithstanding what international law might say. Right. So that's the first part of what he says. Then he says the second part is the president also has this inherent protective power to protect federal officials carrying out their jobs. So, for example, the president can use the army to protect federal officials like an FBI agent doing his or her job. So that means you could send in Delta Force plus the Ranger Division plus an entire Air Force bomber wing to protect an FBI agent serving an arrest warrant against, say, the leader of Panama or, say, the president of Venezuela. So you're left with, so then the executive branch keeps giving itself legal opinions that build on each other, and then Congress never pushes back. So the only people you're left with questioning the legality of this tends to be law professors looking at what the courts have said in the past, what the laws say, and trying to predict what a court would say or should say. And, you know, law professors like me might say, gee, it's hard to believe that the framers had this in mind. It's hard to believe the Constitution permits this. It's hard to believe a court would sign off on this. But this court, this Supreme Court, is extremely friendly to claims of presidential power. So even that might not be true. It's quite possible the Supreme Court would sign off on this. So that's how we got in the situation. Unbelievably, there's no clear court answer as to whether the president can do this.
Well, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. So many questions, never enough time. David Law is our guest, a professor of law at Virginia. 7:21 now, traffic, WWL. 7:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL. David Law, our guest, professor of law at Virginia, at the University of Virginia. And we're talking about the Nicolas Maduro thing. And as I said yesterday, what's legal is not always right. What's right is not always legal. And you can't just do stuff. Or then again, maybe you can just do stuff if you're the president. So geopolitical implications aside, is there any legal difference here between the United States deciding to go in and relieve Ping of his duties in China, or the leader of North Korea, or Putin, or pick a country that violates human rights or that deals in drug trafficking? Is there a difference really between what the United States did with Maduro or those other scenarios legally?
That's the problem right there. It's a slippery slope. There isn't necessarily a difference. There really isn't. So let's say the president of France, the prime minister of Canada, goes fishing, right, with some buddies in the U.S. and happens to fish in federal waters without a license. Well, you could, in theory, send an FBI agent in backed by the U.S. Army to bring him here for trial. In theory, you could.
But even beyond that, Maduro didn't come here to fish, right? I mean, he was there in his country, and he's accused of a 25-page indictment. So I guess let's talk about that, David. What exactly is he charged with? For example, I saw a weapons charge, and I'm just wondering, with the possession of a machine gun, if he's in his own country, and I'm not defending Nicolas Maduro. I'm talking about the legal part of this. Why would that be against U.S. law?
Yeah, so I'm not a criminal law guy, but there's, I think, four sets of charges. Conspiracy to commit narco trafficking, I think, is one of them. Mm-hmm. Then there's the weapons charges you mentioned. One thing that is pretty well established is just because some other government says that something is lawful doesn't mean that we have to permit it under U.S. law. So that's part of it. The other part of it is, can we regulate the behavior of people in other countries? And the U.S. position is tended to be yes. This gets a little tricky. For me, this is a bit sensitive because I lived in Hong Kong and worked there for years. And, you know, I said a number of things that probably in the eyes of the Chinese government are sedition. And the Chinese government has tried to enforce those laws against critics of the Chinese government in other countries. And so, you know, that does cut both ways. And we're going to try to prosecute people extraterritorially, as they say, for things that they've done against U.S. law in other countries. We shouldn't be shocked when other countries like China try to enforce their laws extraterritorially against people in the United States. So it does cut both ways. That's a problem.
So for people that are big supporters of President Trump, is this different than another country? And look, I understand with the defenses of the United States, it's not likely to happen. But is it different legally than another country saying, you know what, you decided to drop a drone or used a drone to destroy this guy or whatever. We're looking at that as an international war crime, so we're going to sweep in and take you out and bring you back to our country for trial. Legally speaking, is there any difference or not?
So, you know, at the end of the day, to really have the answer, you need a court to answer that question. And again, part of the problem is when the president builds on you know, well, here's what I did last time. Here's what I did the time before that. And Congress doesn't push back and no one sues and no one can sue or no one will sue and see it all the way through to judicial decision. You never get a court actually weighing in. So, you know, do I think this is legally questionable? I do, but there's no court that actually has said that the president can't do this in very clear terms. We haven't had anything like a court ruling on this.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it. David Law, E. James Kelly Jr., class of 65, research professor of law and courtesy professor in politics, University of Virginia. We'll talk about the political part of this when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 7:47, 13 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined now by David Schultz, professor of political science and law at Hamline University. Hey, David, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, and I hope all is.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Well,
thank you. From the texts I get here, I can tell you that the people that favor President Trump, right or wrong, think that no matter what, he is totally 100% right with Maduro. Those that hate him or don't like him are completely and totally against it. The truth is probably somewhere in between when it comes to Maduro. Tell me your thoughts as a professor of law and political science about what transpired over the weekend.
Well, what transpired over the weekend raises lots of, I'd say, both legal questions domestically and international law, and a lot of sort of political questions in terms of what's happening. Now, in terms of domestically, if the news accounts are correct, this has been planned for several months. It sounds like, you know, this venture, you know, to get Maduro. And the reason why I mention this is that most people would argue that the Constitution gives the president broad authority to use force to protect the United States if we're attacked. Nobody disputes that. But the Constitution gives the power to Congress to declare war, to finance the military and so forth. And the reason why I mention this is that Congress was largely left in the dark on this. And there's questions regarding whether or not the president actually had the authority to go in and do the kind of operation that he did when we weren't being attacked. So that's one set of legal questions. The other is, under international law, we're not supposed to invade another country's sovereign space. We're not supposed to use force or aggression as a way of resolving disputes. So there's legal questions, but now from a political, and I'm going to say a pragmatic point of view, the president has said, you know, we've taken Maduro out, and we're going to, quote, run the country and pump their oil. Well, what does all that mean in terms of governance and in terms of whether or not or how much we're going to get involved in Venezuela's domestic matters? There's stories that are already pointing out the fact that Maduro's vice president has ordered martial law, cracked down. The government still has control of the military. We're not putting the opposition into power. I mean, are we setting up a recipe for civil war and for us to have to send in troops to protect oil interests? And so it just raises all types of politically thorny questions, and it makes me think about Afghanistan and Iraq all over again.
All right, so politically, does anybody other than those that truly support President Trump or truly oppose him care about any of this at all, or is it all about the price at the pump? And if, for whatever reason, oil prices go down or the price of gasoline goes down, and there's a lot of steps between oil and gasoline, I understand that. But is that the ultimate arbiter of this, that if the price goes down and people are for it, if the price goes up, then they're against it?
It probably will be, I think, at the end of the day, except anybody who thinks that the price is going to go down right away would be by naive. Now, I'm certainly not an oil expert. You probably have people down in your part of the world who know a lot more about refining and stuff like that, you know, than probably you and I do. But it's going to take years to rebuild the oil infrastructure down there. And so I wouldn't expect to see any significant impact on prices, at least in the short term, in terms of what's going to happen. But some are also arguing that at a point where the president is worried about the fact that he has near record low approval ratings, you know, is this kind of a way of diverting some people away from domestic issues, you know, and trying to prop up his ratings? Because we know, you know, Trump wouldn't be the first president to try to use some type of international event as a way of trying to prop up popularity. I mean, it's a very tried and true technique. And so I'm not just accusing Trump, but it's, you know, other presidents have done this too.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We'll go back, talk about what else Congress has to look ahead to and what's on their agenda for 2026, 7:51, 9 till 8, traffic now, WWL. All right, 7:57, 3 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to David Schultz, professor of law and political science at Hamline University. What else does Congress have on their plate? Well, actually, I shouldn't say what else, because this had nothing to do with Congress, really, did it, the Maduro action?
It had nothing to do, although, again, it probably should have. There should have been some kind of consultation as required under both the War Powers Act and under the Constitution. But for the most part, both Republicans and Democrats seem to have been in the dark regarding what happened.
And for those that are listening right now, hearing nothing but, oh, why are you banging on President Trump, brah? Nobody's banging on President Trump, but the thing you have to understand is that once the executive branch assumes powers, next time it might not be your person doing this, and they may decide to go into wherever and start whatever for whatever reason, and there's nothing you'll be able to do about it. That's all we're saying. Tell me about Congress. What is they're going to be looking at in 2026?
Well, a variety of different things are going to be looking at. Remember, it's an election year, which means everything is going to be cast over with how they're eyeing what's going to happen in November of 2026. But for example, if I remember correctly, the budget deal that ended the government shutdown, that's going to be expiring in the next few months. And so they're going to have to revisit some of that. I think we're going to have to look at some point along the line here, probably expanding the debt ceiling again. So we've got these as kind of major points. And then, of course, before the 2026 elections, there's going to be the issue of passing the next budget. And I think the most immediate issue right now is the fact that the subsidies for Obamacare have expired, and we're now looking at a lot of pressure on Congress, especially the Republicans, to come up with an alternative health care plan to be able to address the, you know, the affordability of insurance. I would probably put that pretty much at the highest part of the list here, because I think most of your listeners are probably looking at their insurance premiums and saying, my gosh, you know, how am I going to be able to afford this? And so I would put that on kind of the list.
Where does Congress get involved when it comes to funding whatever happens in Venezuela?
They're supposed to be able to, they have appropriations power. They're the ones who are supposed to appropriate the money and spend the money to be able to pay for whatever we're doing down there.
Thank you, David. Appreciate your time. David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University. When we come back, we'll talk to WWL sports director Steve Geller. Take another look back at the Saints season and look ahead to next season. We'll also talk with Barry Keim, who is LSU health climatologist, about why Mardi Gras is so early this year, and it goes to the whole lunar calendar and all of that stuff. Then we'll wrap up the hour by talking to John Fitzmaurice, the instructor of history at UNO, about the cannons that are across from Jackson Square. Cannon, actually. But what about the Washington artillery? We'll take a look at that. Of course, we'll talk to Arthur Hardy, and we'll talk to Judy Ho about keeping New Year's resolutions. A lot coming up.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.